Hello. Thanks for joining us today to discuss a matter of critical importance for the U.S. and others around the world. My name is Jim Warren. I am Executive Director of NC Warn. We're a nonprofit climate and energy watchdog group based in Durham, North Carolina. We were formed in the late 1980s. I am the author of the report we are releasing today, but I had a lot of fine help. I'm going to give a brief overview of our findings and then get comments from Dr. William Schlesinger and then from attorney John Runkle, and then we will open it up for questions. As of 10 a.m., our news release and the full report can be found at ncwarn.org. It's at the center of the home page under recent news. The report NC Warn is releasing today is an unprecedented analysis of utility practices in the Southeast. Its title is New Nuclear Power is Ruining Climate Protection Efforts and Harming Customers. The main findings are that the Southeast utilities that are trying to revive nuclear power in the U.S. do not plan to replace coal-fired power as advertised, but to add nuclear capacity. And that's despite falling demand. And it's while they are constantly increasing customer rates and blocking the clean energy advances that could be speeding the phase out of coal across the Southeast. We conducted this study because climate change is devastating humans and other life across the planet, and it's within a very few years of passing irreversible tipping points. The Southeast U.S. could prove pivotal in turning the global tide and averting runaway global warming. As you know, the U.S. nuclear industry has spent 6 years in a public relations blitz touting new nuclear power plants as essential for a low-carbon future. But meanwhile, the U.S. revival has contracted, and the only reason anyone is still trying to build nuclear plants in the U.S. is because the utilities in the Southeast have captured our state governments, and they are now allowed to force customers to absorb enormous financial risks by being forced to prepay for new nuclear plants through annual rate hikes. Now, despite all the PR claims about moving to a low-carbon future, the Southeast Five have no intention of closing their large coal-fired power plants. Instead, they are pursuing costly and unneeded nuclear and natural gas projects while blocking the proven economically superior path that could retire coal, and that's by increasing proven energy efficiency programs along with solar and wind power. The Southeast Five that I refer to are the Duke Energy Carolinas, Florida Power and Light, Georgia Power, which is part of the Southern Company, South Carolina Electric and Gas, and Progress Energy, which maintains two separate service areas in Florida and in the Carolinas. The shift that is needed to help with climate change is also essential because of a regional economic triple threat posed by the current path, and that is, number one, worsening climate disasters, which are already hammering local, state, and national budgets and the public, and we have numerous examples that are occurring year in, year out. Number two, eye-watering rate hikes caused by massive expansion of unneeded generation capacity. And number three, the high risk of nuclear project failures. And that risk is at 50% according to the Congressional Budget Office. And that risk is exacerbated, by the way, because federal regulators plan to allow major design changes with nuclear projects well after construction begins. For years, the nuclear industry has told the public that despite financial and safety hazards, new nuclear plants are needed so coal plants can be replaced. As our report shows, the reality is that the Southeast Five CEOs have no intention of phasing out coal, even though accelerating climate changes are already hammering our economies, as I mentioned. We analyzed data filed with regulators in a region where most of the remaining U.S. nuclear projects are being pursued. One example, we found that despite CEO Jim Rogers' purported green credentials, Duke Energy Carolina's plans to reduce coal-fired generation by less than 4% by 2030, while expanding generation capacity by a net 36%. Rogers has boasted of plans to retire coal units, but our report shows that all of those are old small boilers and some aren't being used at all. Duke is on track to double customers' power bills. They have a current rate request that would bring residential rates to 25% higher than they were at the end of 2009. And note that they have not even finished charging for the Cliffside coal-fired plant that's under construction, and they have not begun to charge for the Lee Nuclear Station or their other massive expansion. That same pattern is likely to play out around the Southeast. Others among the Southeast Five are also pursuing growth strategies despite national trends of declining long-term electricity usage due to economic restructuring and the growth of energy-saving practices. Our report shows that some of those companies intend to expand sales outside their regions. In total, the Southeast Five plan to retire only 16% of their coal capacity, mostly by closing older plants that have been fully depreciated and are little used. Also, the Southeast Five are not only ignoring, but as I said earlier, actively blocking the advances in solar and wind power and efficiency programs that could help speed the phase out of coal plants while reducing the need for new nuclear units. It's notable that Duke Energy and Progress Energy in the Carolinas, where they are required at this point to develop modest levels of energy efficiency and renewable power, both of those companies plan to cease development of those resources after they meet the requirements of the 2007 REPS legislation. So some of these utilities claim, by the way, that new natural gas plants are cleaner than coal, and so they're ramping up development of natural gas. But we note in the report that Cornell researchers have concluded that the fracking fuel cycle, which has become so controversial, could actually make natural gas worse than coal in terms of total greenhouse gas emissions. We also note that Progress Energy CEO Bill Johnson plans to put gas units into his rate base, but to keep burning coal whenever that fuel is cheaper in the marketplace than natural gas. So they want to have it both ways. Our report emphasizes that even if the global community quickly begins reducing emissions, climate conditions will continue worsening for decades due to past emissions. That period of time will fully challenge our economic and social systems with chaotic weather and wildfires and impaired water and food supplies, all of which amplify global conflicts and suffering. We are calling on the heads of these five corporations in the Southeast to use this narrow window of opportunity, which is closing rapidly, to avert runaway climate change and to help by joining the public in a clean energy revolution that creates jobs and protects power bills. CEOs Jim Rogers and Bill Johnson in particular are focus of our report because they hope to soon lead one of the world's largest electric utilities, which would be a merged Duke and Progress Energy. They are in position to provide a positive tipping point towards stabilization of our global climate and southeastern economies without adding more nuclear power, instead of continuing to block the very path that can phase out electric generation from carbon-based fuels. If they remain on the current path, they are very likely to face a public revolt over climate change and soaring power bills, which has already begun in Florida. There is no time to pretend that nuclear power can help with the climate crisis. In closing, I want to be really clear. Based on solid research, we know how to replace coal in the Southeast. It's by steady increases in efficiency and renewables, all of which are proven and economically sound, but the Southeast Five are blocking that path. By contrast, the continued pursuit of nuclear plants, while not closing coal power plants, could ensure that the Southeast continues exacerbating the climate crisis instead of helping to mitigate it. So here's the nuclear paradox that we describe in the report. In order to close coal-fired power plants and slow global climate change, we must stop Southeastern utilities from trying to develop nuclear power plants. I'm going to turn over the discussion to Dr. William Schlesinger. We are honored that he has joined us today. He is president of the Carey Institute of Ecosystem Studies. He was longtime dean of Duke University's Nicholas School of the Environment and Earth Sciences. Bill was elected to the National Academy of Sciences in 2003. He's also a highly respected scientist who for 30 years has specialized in the impacts of climate change on ecosystems. And he has a broad and very impressive view of the overall climate situation, and he'll talk about the need for genuine solutions at this critical time. Thank you for joining us, Bill.
Well, glad to be here, and appreciated your opening remarks there. I want to supplement both the NC Warren report and the remarks that Jim Warren just gave us. I think there's ample food for thought in both of those presentations. But I'd like to supplement this with my views as an ecosystem scientist and one that's looked at climate change and the potential to avert climate change by societal activities. I think we need to look beyond the current inaction in Congress, almost the circus that surrounds the politicization of climate change debates in Congress. The scientific community, perhaps more than on any other large issues, my point of comparison there is perhaps the linkage between cigarettes and lung cancer. But on the climate change issue, I think the scientific community is even more certain that we are destined for a significant amount of human-induced climate change in the next decades and century. The physics is solid that when you have carbon dioxide in a planetary atmosphere, it impedes the outflow of infrared radiation to space, and so the planetary body gets warmer. That's been known for 150 years or so. We know that there are fluctuations in climate geologically, but there are no fluctuations to the extent and at the speed that the ongoing climate warming is showing back to about 8 or 10,000 years ago. And that includes the entire length of human society organized in cities with trade and culture and agriculture. So this is really fundamental. It's changing the way the world operates for humans and for other species. This summer's report that the Arctic sea ice is at an unprecedented low level, low extent, and the recent extremes of weather from the droughts in Texas to the flooding in the Northeast, all are consistent with global climate models that suggest increasing extremes of weather events. It's important, I think, that as Jim said, that the Southeast do its part, and perhaps more than its part, to offer solutions to the global climate change problem. It is poised to set an example for the kinds of things that might be done both across the country and around the world. There is no benefit in pointing the finger at a country like China and saying that's where the big problem is. Certainly China has a problem of carbon dioxide emissions and excessive reliance on coal-fired power plants. But we're all in this together. A carbon dioxide molecule emitted anywhere on the planet warms the planet everywhere. As Jim pointed, we're rapidly approaching a tipping point, which a number of scientists suggest is about 450 parts per million carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. As we speak today, we're about 394. When I started in this field, we were at about 320. So we've come up quite rapidly. We still have a window of opportunity to do something before we get to a tipping point of about 450 parts per million, beyond which harmful changes in climate, harmful levels of global warming and alterations of precipitation are likely to be inevitable, and we'll be in a situation of society simply paying the bill. It's important to recognize that coal is by far the worst emitter of carbon dioxide per unit of energy generated, in among the choice of fossil fuels today. And electric power plants, of course, are the major users and emitters of coal, users of coal, emitters of carbon dioxide. It's also important to recognize there's a lot of ancillary problems with coal, including emissions of NOx, nitric oxide, and mercury, and to recognize that, in, at least in the East, that a large fraction of the coal comes from mountaintop removal mining in the Appalachians, which has a whole set of environmental problems associated with it. So we want to focus on carbon dioxide and climate today, but coal has got a whole litany of problematic ancillary effects associated with it. I think I join a large number of environmental scientists recognizing that the sooner we wean our energy demand from coal, the better off we will be. Now, I see two major ways in which we can do that, and both of these are possibilities that are wide open for the Southeast. They'd move faster if they were embraced by the utilities in question. The first is efficiency improvements, and the second is to look at various kinds of renewable energy. As Jim Blackburn said numerous times before his unfortunate death a few months ago, the major programs in efficiency could obviate the need for much of the generation capacity that's proposed for the Southeast. And this efficiency could come at a wide variety of levels. It could be embraced. In fact, it, I think as regulated monopolies, it ought to be embraced by the power companies that serve the people in these areas. Our utilities have not generally been motivated to pursue efficiency, and certainly I think have done the minimal job. In the report, particularly in the appendix, you'll see a table of data that talks about the relative percent improvements as a result of renewables and efficiency. They're both very small. I think we should also think about these renewables replacing fossil carbon dioxide from coal, oil, and natural gas, and in particular in the Southeast, coal, with sources of energy that do not release carbon dioxide to the atmosphere. I'm strongly in favor of looking at wind and solar as possible and proven avenues to pursue in the Southeast. There is certainly exciting developments and recognition of wind energy capability in coastal North Carolina and offshore. I know from my own experience living in Durham when I was a faculty member at Duke that solar panels on the roof of our house were quite effective in reducing our personal power bill. So a distributed energy generation system, keep the grid as a backup and a battery to accept excess power generated locally and redistribute it. All those kinds of things would be helpful and I would believe appropriate for the utilities to be involved in this region. Let me close by saying that these suggestions are not something from a pie-in-the-sky environmentalist. I think as the report outlines, they in almost every case make good economic sense, and they will leave a healthier environment for humans, both in the Southeast and throughout the planet as global warming impinges on all of us. So let me close my remarks there, and obviously I'll be available for questions at the end of the conference here.
Thank you very much. That was Dr. William Schlesinger, and I will now turn it over to NC Warren attorney John Runkle. He has been one of North Carolina's most experienced environmental and energy attorneys over the years. He's been working with NC Warren for about 6 years. We're grateful for his help in preparing this report. John is also one of the few people around who are very proficient in analyzing utility documents in North Carolina and the Southeast. So, John Runkle?
Thanks, Jim. My name is John Runkle. I'm an environmental attorney in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. I'm counsel for NC Warren and represented before the North Carolina Utilities Commission, the North Carolina General Assembly, and groups like the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. The NC1 report will be filed Friday as part of our comments on the annual Integrated Resource Plans, the IRPs, that are filed with the North Carolina Utilities Commission. We look forward to sharing the NC1 report with decision makers across the Southeast. I'd like to address two points in the NC1 report. First is the exaggerated growth estimates and the plans to sell outside the region. Now, in 2009, Duke Energy forecast that its retail demand for electricity would be flat or actually decline over a six-year period. So from 2009 to 2015, no growth in demand. Now, even in the first quarter of 2011, nationwide, the demand for electricity declined for the first time ever. And the utility-funded Electric Power Research Institute expects demand to decline by 0.5% annually for the next decade. In looking at this, the Progress Energy CEO, Bill Johnson, stated at the recent merger hearing, no one knows if it's customer concern about the economy or a structural change. I'd like to think the structural change is using electricity smarter. New bulbs, new appliances, greener houses, renewable technologies. So that seems to be, you know, where things have been going, that the demand is actually declining. But in 2011, Duke Energy returned to its robust growth estimates of 1.4% per year. The other Southeast utilities also have forecast high growth in demand for the next 10, 15 years. This results in two things. It provides impetus to build new generating plants, and as NC Warren notes, generates excess capacity that can be sold outside the region. Both give the utilities greater profits as the high cost of new plants go into the rate base, and the sale of electricity is lucrative. The net effect on electric bills will be staggering, especially in the states with the annual rate increases from including the construction work in progress, the CWIP, where the ratepayers have paid for all the plant construction up front. So my conclusion is these utilities' business models have taken the Southeast directly away from climate protection and economic stability. We know how to close coal plants without adding more nuclear plants by steadily increasing energy-saving programs and by bringing in solar and wind and cogeneration. It's time to change course. Thank you, and I'll also be available for questions.